Good evening. Together with Nana Heidenreich and Rana Dasgupta and with my colleagues here at HKW, I would like to warmly welcome you here to our 3 days manifestation, commitment, and thought, which we entitled, Now is the Time of Monsters, What Comes After Nations, to which I have the pleasure to give you a short introduction. Around 2 years ago, when we mapped out the current program, 100 Years of Now, here at HKW, we wanted to get a deeper understanding of the increasingly porous systems of classification and knowledge at a time when the great divisions between human, animal, and machine, born out of modernity and humanism, seem to have lost their stamina. We were interested in undertaking an analysis of the present by linking it back to historical ideals of modernity, be they formed out of a utopian fabric or aimed at a standardized new society. In my research, I came across British diplomat Harold Nicholson's diary on the negotiations at the Paris Peace Conference after the First World War. One thing in particular struck me, the seating plan of the conference at the Salle du Pays at Quai d'Orsay. The seemingly unblameable, well-settled scheme by seating the 72 delegates from 30 countries around a U-shaped table in the spirit of the grand rules of diplomacy with the target to reorganize the world of that time, the plan mirrors a set of aspects which are burdening us up to the present day. On the one hand, it clearly indicates which entities were allowed to speak at the table of world politics, concretizing the idea of the nation as something inextricably intertwined with state organization, territory, society, and capital. On the other hand, this plan speaks the language of the void, of the missing, of techniques of exclusion. Representatives of various groups came to Paris to take up the fight for a different project of world organization, one that arose in the context of anti-colonialist discourse and the critique of global economic connections between war, production, and exploitation. For instance, the first Pan-African Congress and the first Congress of the Women's International League of Peace and Freedom were held in parallel to the peace conference. They claimed a different model, a society of equal states, which would ensure common standards of domestic and international behavior. Most obviously, in the hierarchy of the peace conference, no space was allotted to this set of perspectives. Even today, our modes of thought and action are marked so deeply by these inherited classifications that as we watch the disintegration of modern world order, we still use these categories and strategies to invent the future. The nation state and its global framework is one of these inherited classifications from modernity. It was only after the First World War that the nation state was definitely established as the universal mode of human organization. Since then, claims by colonized peoples for political autonomy were all understood to be demands for national self-determination along the lines of the Western model. On top of this, a coherent system of sovereign states was imagined on a global scale in which all states could be equivalent legal entities whose affairs would be regulated by a rational international framework. For the most part, however, the idealism of these structures failed to materialize. Even as old concepts of classification and organization were being overturned, the new system inherited a legacy of imperial relations and racist inequalities, which from the very beginning foreclosed possibilities of a global society of equal states. This reaffirmation of historical power structures depicts a tragic lack of political imagination, especially when we consider the many alternative models being discussed around this time, which have now become entirely remote to us. From the international peace movement to ideas of federal world state, from transnational anti-colonial movements to communist internationalism. Today, those alternative futures seem out of reach, as well as the very idea that political innovation at the macro scale may be possible at all. Our project wants to reclaim the zone of political rearticulation once again, especially at a time when nationalist and autocratic movement are at a high level. Antonio Gramsci located a similar crisis after the First World War in his very much quoted prison files, which he called the time of morbid symptoms. He suggested that maladies will out of necessity arise when the structures of the old world can no longer grapple with contemporary conditions. Today's crisis, the time of monsters, is situated in a similar temporal and structural latency. Responding to his suggestion, we hope to create a space for thought beyond the nation-state system. Theorists, artists, and writers will trace the foundations of present condition by disassembling old frames and structures, proposing alternative narratives or rearticulations of the past, present, and future. One of those proposals already accompanied you on your way up from through the foyer up to the auditorium, Christian Niampeter's work From Left to Night. When we put the nation state on trial, what are meaningful contributions to the crafting of more habitable futures, he asked, among others. A sensitivity to what we are studying by zooming in. Out of this, a new perspective might emerge, he responds. A close reading into his work, Christian Niembitter, will give later that evening. Four thematic fields structure our 3 days endeavor. Our starting point is to critically rethink how the nation-state idea became a global project after the First World War and thus managed to replace all other ideas of political reorganization. And we look at other forms of political belonging within, between, and across nations. The second theme is the standard of civilization, which is an undercurrent of the nation-state system. In the need to create and administer an international order in the late 19th century, the paradigm of civilization proved to be valuable as a technique of excluding non-European states. With decolonization, the standard of civilization largely disappeared from the vocabulary of international law. However, the basic structure for the analytic framework was replicated in a new vocabulary, namely that of good governance, transparency, and human rights. This plunges us into the massive transformations of the nation state which he is undergoing. This third thematic field endeavors to draw a portrait of the contemporary nation state by mapping out current technologies employed by the nation state. Many of its ongoing mutations are grounded in the needs of global capital, and some of its old residues of power are now administered by supranational entities which establish a sovereign power of another order. And finally, we focus upon what has demonstrated a porosity of the nation-state system since its inception, migration. Migration, as we address it, is a consequence of political and social movement, directly challenging the order of the nation state by demonstrating its inadequacy. In this session, we want to discuss how migration provokes political structures and compels us to think about them in a radically different way. We start off with three contributions asking how the nation state system managed to replace other ideas of political organization and what was lost in this process. Our first speaker is Lawrence Liang, legal scholar, writer, and activist. He will examine why the potential heritage of Pan-Asianism may still serve as a reference point when rethinking nationalism in Asia. Following up, this artist, Kutsunai Chiurai, looks at a state of nation through a projection, the speech by the first female prime minister of an African state. A subsequent conversation between Kutsunai Chiurai and author Rana Dasgupta will explore contemporary conditions between an unresolved past and an unknown future. And finally, historian Jamil Aydin investigates the current international order. 100 years after the Paris Peace Conference, this order aims at proving the naturalness of nationalism and nation-state formation by means of a historical narrative, one that implies the inevitability of this very nationalism. In the face of this predicament, Cemil Aydin revisits the cosmopolitan empires of the past. And before I pass over to Lawrence Liang, we would like to thank all participants for your untiring commitment in shaping our 3 days investigation into our contemporary world and how we might rethink it for the future, yet not to be articulated. I wish us all an intensive and inspiring 3 days. Thank you very much.